Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Well, welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the lawyers with the Herzog Law Firm, and this is the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, which is brought to you each Saturday morning from 8 to 9 o'clock on the stations that we're on four different stations all at once. So, anyway, this is cool. I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving and didn't eat too much turkey. Did you eat too much turkey, Debbie?
You can never eat too much turkey.
No, I didn't. And last night we had hot turkey sandwiches because they were leftovers, and it was great. And so it was a great weekend and a wonderful time, and hopefully all of our listeners had a wonderful Thanksgiving. And last night, we had a dusting of snow last night in Albany. Did you in Saratoga?
Yeah, we did. It's, took the dog out for a walk, and she's she's a black dog. By the time we got back, she was a little bit off-white.
Well, maybe she's just getting gray hair. She's kind of old, isn't she? No offense, Millie.
Don't
Millie?
Tell
no.
What can I say?
I saw in the Times Union this morning, this was the latest snow. November, what's today? The 27th, 8th, 9th, something like that? 27th. This is the latest measurable snow in Albany, according to the Times Union this morning, since like 1889. So, much for global warming, huh? Anyway, so listen, Debbie and I are here for the next hour, along with Ben Patton, who is manning the boards.
I am.
And he is, and here he is. Happy Thanksgiving to you also, man.
Thank you very much.
And so if you would like to talk to us about estate planning, Medicaid planning, asset protection, the availability of home care, Medicaid planning, wills, trusts, estate administration, taxes, all that good stuff, we are here to answer your questions at, 518-476-5900. I haven't been on a few weeks. At 518-476-5900. And you will come right into the studio and be our first caller. So there. All right. As promised, before we came on the air, a very important new law was signed by Governor Hochul this week. Okay? And it is it's called the Pet Custody Law. For those of you out there, now, we do not do matrimonial work in the firm, not a whole lot anyway. We are primarily estate planning, estate administration, and real estate. But we do get involved with prenuptial agreements and things. So the new law that Governor Hochul just signed allows judges to consider the best interests of the animal in divorce cases that involve a pet, okay? Unlike children, which of course have always been, the best interest of the child has always been considered in custody and things like that. Previously, New York treated animals just like property, just like a car or a TV set, okay? Instead of giving them certain amounts of rights. And the guy who was the impetus for this law is a guy named Matthew Cooper, who has been a matrimonial judge in New York City for like 30 years. And he thought, for a long time, the pet disputes seem to involve primarily Yorkies. All right, Judge Cooper said, but it goes through stages. I don't know. You'd have a Yorkie. No, I don't. I haven't had a dog in a long time. He said now the disputes tend to involve some form of doodle. I don't know. What are those doodles? They're all these interbred dogs that
labradoodles. Yeah.
They're labradoodles, and so anyway, there was one case he had involving a dog named Otis. Now Otis, his ex-wife, claimed that her ex-husband had taken Otis and refused to let her see him, and she sought to get full custody of Otis. So he was considering the decision. Sadly, Otis died before the case could be resolved.
Aww.
Rest in peace, Otis. Okay? So then Judge Cooper looked at a lot of other relevant statistics. For instance, you do know this, Debbie? 76% of pet owners feel guilty about leaving their animals at home when they go to work. 41%
That's when mine goes to doggy daycare.
Oh, well, you are a responsible parent.
I am. I am a responsible parent.
41% of them take their dogs on vacation with them. That really annoys the heck out of me. I'm sorry, but, you know, it's like bringing a screaming kid to a restaurant, you know. Go get a babysitter. I'm sorry. 38% telephone their pets during the day so that they can hear the human voices and aren't lonely. Do you call Millie? Is it Millie? What's your dog's name?
Nellie.
Do you call Nellie during the day?
No, she's at doggy daycare. She'd rather not see me or hear from me. She's happy.
Anyway, Judge Cooper concluded that pets should be given special legal status. And so, now they have it. So, how does a judge determine the best interest of an animal, for instance? Now, Judge Judy, who's not a real judge, she's a TV judge, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And she's doing a new show coming out called Judy Justice now. It's going to be called Judy Justice. Mm-hmm. Do you know how much, do you know she makes $45 million a year?
I love Judge Judy.
She is the highest paid person in all of television. She makes $45 million a year doing that silly show, which everybody watches. Okay, so Judge Judy once adjudicated a pet custody on her TV show by ordering Baby Boy. Baby Boy was a small white dog into the courtroom. The dog rushed to the plaintiff's side. "It's his dog," Judge Judy decreed. "That's all. Take the dog home." I guess that's how you... That's how you decide. All right.
But did he have treats in his pocket? Did he have treats in his pocket? Was it set up?
Probably.
Leg, you know, could have been.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Probably. You know, he went to the husband. You know, you can't trust this guy. Okay. So anyway, all right. And back in 2000 in San Diego, this could only happen in California, in a divorce action, a bonding study was conducted by an animal behaviorist on the fate of a dog named Gigi. Remember that movie with Maurice Chevalier, mm-hmm. Gigi? Gigi was a greyhound pointer mix. And one exhibit offered by the wife's attorneys was a video called A Day in the Life of Gigi. It was Hollywood. You know, they had to make a movie. It took 2 years, and the parties spent close to $150,000 in legal fees for the wife to persuade the court that Gigi should live with her. Well, there you go. And yes, Judge Cooper said, as he concluded, that is the decision. Also, for all you cat lovers out there, it's not just dogs. It applies to cats as well. Although Judge Cooper said, spoiler alert, cat owners, he finds it hard to imagine that anyone would fight over a cat.
Oh, I bet people would.
Well, you know, I had my wife and I had a cat for 17 years, and I don't know, had we gotten divorced, I think we would have fought over the cat. I love Mitty, and so does she. So
Mitty?
Here's the moral of the story. If you bring a pet, listen, in a prenuptial agreement, I don't know that I've done that at all, but, you know, if you enter into a prenuptial agreement, there's no harm in settling the rights. People do that. They settle custody rights, you know, decisional rights, financial rights. You could also settle rights with respect to animals and things like that. So anyway, that was just a little... hopefully humorous aside. And now we'll get back to the calls. 518
to estate planning.
476-5900. 518-476-5900. Okay.
You know,
your turn.
My turn. So back to estate planning. Anyway, so it's interesting that you talk about pets because more and more wills that I'm doing for couples has a provision, especially if they don't have any kids, right, that says my dog goes to my friend Sally, and with that I give her $5,000 to take care of the dog, and then if Sally can't take care of the dog, it goes to George, and if George can't take care of the dog, then it goes, you know, it has to go to a no-kill shelter. So that, I've seen that, and the best one I ever saw was this couple, they had no kids, and they had a dog. It was a young dog, but it had a lot of medical problems. So it was very expensive to take care of this dog. And they both passed. And in their will, they had made arrangements with this veterinarian. And the dog went to the veterinarian. And in their will, it said, you know, whoever adopts this, after 1 month after they have adopted this dog, then they get $20,000. Right?
Wow. So that's a nice incentive.
Well, no, the people didn't know. He wasn't allowed to tell them.
Sure. It was a secret.
Yeah, so someone actually, you know, fell in love with the dog, adopted the dog, right? Took the dog home knowing that it had all these medical issues. And then all of a sudden, ta-da, they get a check. Pretty cool, huh?
Cool. Wow. That's neat. That's very thoughtful. Because, you know, the thing about it is when people think about their pets, they often don't think about, I mean, you have a dog. I haven't had an animal in a while, probably not in 10 years. But, you know, the last time you took the dog to the pet, to the veterinarians, huh?
Mm-hmm.
What was it, a couple hundred bucks? Huh? I mean, people have surgery done on their dogs. It's $2,000-$3,000, like for a hip replacement and stuff like that on a dog. If you're leaving your animal to someone in your will or in your trust, for heaven's sake, leave them some money to take care of the dog. These animals are very expensive to take care of well, and they need, particularly as they get older, as with people, they need a lot of medical care, most of which isn't covered by insurance.
True. So I wanted to mention, we have webinars this week. It's Webinar Wednesday. I love to say that. Anyway, so Wednesday, December 1st at 10 a.m., we have Elder Law Basics. And then at 2 in the afternoon, we have What to Do When a Loved One Dies. And it sounds kind of morbid, but the one at 2 in the afternoon is kind of cool because it spikes memories, right? So if you go and you listen to this and you're like, oh my gosh, I need to take care of that, or oh my gosh, I never thought about that, it's very interesting. It's a great one. And then Wednesday, December 8th at 10 a.m., Top 10 Reasons to Plan Your Estate, and 2 in the afternoon, How Not to Pay for Services, Long-Term Care Solutions. And then the week of December 13th is Webinar Week. We have a webinar at 2 in the afternoon every day. So we got Wills versus Trusts on the 13th, Legal and Financial Planning for Alzheimer's Disease on the 14th, Aging in Place on the 15th, Advanced Directives on the 16th, and last but not least, Friday, December 17th, Medicaid Estate Planning Myths. So if you want to register for any of those, go to herzoglaw.com. You click on the Seminar tab, and you click on Register. And if you can't make it to any of those live, you can click on that same Seminar tab, and then you go down to Estate and Medicaid Planning Webinars, and you can watch them. A lot of them have been recorded, and you can just watch them at your leisure. Kind of like Netflix, right? You can binge watch our
webinars. You can binge watch the Herzog Law Firms. I mean, seriously. I mean, and you can learn so much from these presentations. What do they run about? A half an hour to an hour?
About 45 minutes.
Generally?
Yeah, about 45 minutes.
So you really can listen to them at your leisure if you don't, you know, if you got something at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, you can come back later in the day and watch them over again. And it really, we get so many compliments from folks who have listened to these things, and they come in the office because they hear these things, and then it spurs, you know, a thought about something, and you know, or it reminds them that maybe it's time to come in and revisit their wills. I have had three people in the last 2 weeks who haven't been in like 15 years to redo their estate plan. Now, and we do, I mean, we're pretty good at this. We are proactive in the sense that we try to send out a letter in our client information base. We send a letter, I think, like every 5 years to a client and say, look, yeah, we haven't talked to you in 5 years. Maybe, if nothing else, pick up the phone and let's re-review your estate plan and see if anything's changed or needs to be updated. And a lot of people respond to that, but others do not. So it's important. And particularly, you know, this is the beginning of the holiday season, notwithstanding the fact that the Christmas decorations have been out since August or September, right? They put them up, I don't know if you got Home Depot or Lowe's or Walmart. I mean, they're up by before Halloween. They are up before Halloween. But now is, you know, when I was a kid, the Christmas season kicked off, you know, the day after Thanksgiving. So you've had the opportunity this weekend probably, and you will over the next few weeks, in the 4 weeks between now and Christmas, to go ahead. You're going to be with your family. Many of you are going to be out with family. You're going to be with your parents. You're going to see grandparents, aunts and uncles, cousins and people like that. Be observant, please. Be observant in those situations and look at their current state, their physical condition, their cognitive, emotional condition. There's a fair amount of depression among older people that is very common, and whether they are able to care for themselves or they're getting to a point where they need care, because we have, you know, I know we keep drumming this in the show, but home care through the Medicaid system is available, and we have about a 4-month window left, don't we, Debbie, between now and April 1st?
Oh, no, they punched it out to July 1st so far. That's the rumor July 1st now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, isn't that
out again?
Well, even so. So we got 6-7 months now for people who need, and this may go away. They may never put in I don't know, it's possible. We have a new governor, so she might have different feelings about this than the previous governor did. But we can get home care for people without incurring a penalty, a look-back penalty, as we do with chronic care in nursing homes. And so if you have a family member who looks like they're going to be in need of help, some type of home care, personal care assistance in the next 6 months, for heaven's sakes, give us a call and let's look at that situation and see if we can help you. The other tremendous advantage that the Herzog Law Firm has is we have in-house a certified geriatric care manager who can... She comes out and visits people. She's not a lawyer. She is a person who can evaluate you and put you in touch with the right kinds of people to get the kind of care that your family member needs. And Kim is she's really good with folks. She's very personal. She's an excellent communicator, and she can come out to your grandma's house or your Aunt Helen's house and sit down with you for an hour and a half, and talk about the kinds of services she might need with respect to meal preparation, bathing, dressing, light housekeeping, transportation, and cobble together a program that might really keep your family member home for another year or two, rather than seriously looking at putting them either in assisted living or in a nursing home. So we have these things available, and it's really important that you know that they're available so you can take advantage of them when the time comes and your own family member needs those kind of services.
Yeah, Kim is amazing. She really is. She actually helped here. She's had community Medicaid. She was able to stay in her home, and she's progressively deteriorating. And so Kim worked with her sister and with her and with someone that does exactly what Kim does out in Ohio, and they found a place for my friend to go in Ohio. And so she's going to go to Ohio now, and she'll only be like 20 minutes from her sister. And it's going to work out great. It's a care facility that accepts community Medicaid. So, I mean, it's going to be hopefully a smooth transition, but there's no way we could have done it without Kim. She's awesome.
Well, there's so many things you have to take into consideration besides just the legal aspects of, you know, getting someone financially eligible from an asset standpoint and an income standpoint, and then doing the legal mechanics of applying for and getting approved for the services. Kim deals with all the other stuff that you know, the really important stuff. I mean, when you have care in your home, you don't want to have to drive 45 minutes to see your relative, you know. So there's location. She can come into the house and say, look, we got to do some retrofitting here in the house. We need to put some railings. We need some grab bars in the bathroom, in the shower, and things like that. So and most people don't know about these things. And if you have someone who is basically pretty much almost bedridden, you know, you want some kind of a floating mattress that vibrates and avoids having bed sores. You may want to install cameras and things like that. So, you know, there's all these kinds of things that she thinks about that are more like medical care providing things. We don't, as lawyers, necessarily talk about. But so that's just some aside about the other kinds of things. We would love to have a call here this morning. Where is everybody? I know what happened. Everybody ate too much turkey, and the tryptophan put them all to sleep.
Turkey coma.
518-476-5900 is our number here at Magic 590. And the other thing that's happening, obviously, with the holidays coming on, and is the thought of gift giving, right?
Hmm.
So we can give away gifts, right, without paying a tax?
Yep, up to $15,000. That's the IRS rule, but what is the Department of Social Services rule?
Well, if you give away, you may not have to pay a tax to the IRS, but you may be penalized if you give away a gift for Medicaid purposes, if you apply mm-hmm. for Medicaid for chronic care. Now, having said that, I rarely, if ever, discourage my clients from giving gifts, okay? And one thing, if you want to do that, it's not a bad idea to establish some sort of consistent pattern of gift giving along the way. You know, because if you normally give your children, let's say you give them each $1,000 at Christmas, all right, and you got three kids, so you give them each $1,000 at Christmas time, and then, you know, you give them each $10,000 the year that you're going into the nursing home, that's not going to wash, okay, in terms of mm-hmm. gift giving, all right? It has to be consistent over a period of time and consistent somewhat in terms of the amount of the gifts that you give as well. But, and from a tax standpoint, it's usually better to give cash to your kids, like money in your bank accounts, as opposed to giving them stocks and bonds. Mm-hmm. Because if you give your daughter a share of stock that you bought 25 years ago for $10 a share, and now it's worth $40 a share, although after yesterday, I'm not sure that's the case. The market went down 900 points yesterday. Gee, so anyway, that wasn't funny. But your daughter's going to get stuck with your $10 cost basis. If she sells the stock for $50, she's going to have $40 of long-term capital gain that she has to pay a tax on. If you write her a check for $1,000, you don't have to pay any capital gains tax. There's no gain or loss associated with giving away cash, other than the long-term effect of inflation. But, you know, stocks, on the other hand, if you give that $10 stock that's now worth $40 to a charity, guess what? You get to take a $40 tax deduction on your income tax return if you itemize for charitable giving. So there's a tremendous advantage to an individual from giving appreciated stocks, appreciated assets to a charity, because, you know, you only paid $10 for the stock and you're going to get deduct $40 off of your, off of your income taxes or a charitable contribution deduction.
Harry, Debbie.
Huge advantage.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump on you there, Harry. We have our first caller of the morning. We have Diane in Delmar.
Morning, Diane.
Morning, Diane. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Real good.
Very well, thanks. I just did a new power of attorney, and I'm wondering where I should keep it. Should I keep it? Should I give it to my son, who I have designated? I wasn't sure where the document should be.
So do you have the original, or do you have a copy?
I think I may have an original and a copy.
Okay. I would probably keep the original in a safe place and then just mm-hmm. tell your son that whenever or if he ever needs to use it, where it is, because the problem is sometimes banks require an original, and if something happened to you, you know, you wouldn't want it so that you couldn't find the original so the person couldn't act for you, right? So
okay.
You need to keep it. I wouldn't suggest that you put it in a safety deposit box, because that's a whole other story about somebody else trying to get into a safety deposit box. But definitely keep it someplace safe. Maybe give him a copy, right? But
mm-hmm.
keep it someplace safe so that just in case, if something happened in the future, they would know where the original is.
Okay. Yeah. So a lockbox at home or something like that.
Mm-hmm. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. What we do normally when we do powers of attorney in the office for our clients, we normally keep the originals here in our vault along with a will. So if you ever need it, you just call the office, and then you would get copies of the things, so they're not floating around where somebody could use them without your permission, but they're available if something happens to you in order to access those things and information. So normally with our client, we normally would keep, at least there'd be one original here in the office at all times in case the other one did get misplaced or something like that. So that's a good, if you had a lawyer prepare it for you, I don't know, but I would be guessing the lawyer may have retained a copy, an original copy in their files. And that would be worth a phone call to the lawyer, unless it's something you just downloaded online and did yourself.
No, I did have a lawyer prepare it. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. Have a great holiday. Thanks. All right. Bye-bye.
You know, those are great questions, Harry, because your document's just like a will. If they can't find your original will when you pass away and they have to probate it, then you have no will.
Well, the presumption is that you destroyed it, and therefore there is no will. And so guess what? And then you wind up dying as if you died without a will. And
intestate.
So let's say intestate, yes, without a testimonium, which is the will. In witness whereof, the last will and testament. That is what it is. It is a testament. And so, you know, you left all of your half your money to charity and the other half to your nieces and nephews, all right? Mm-hmm. I have a situation right now where I have a client who has a fair amount of assets and a sister and a brother from whom he is estranged. So he is leaving all of his funds, most of it at least, to his nieces and nephews. And so if that will disappeared, guess what? If he died intestate, his money wouldn't go to his nieces and nephews. It would go to his brother and sister, which is not where he wants it to go. So it's really critically important that not only that the documents be prepared so that your assets pass to the people and organizations you want them to go to, but so the original is easily found at the time you die. That's just really, really important. And that's often why I would say 95% of our clients leave their original will in our custody, in our vault. And I think many other lawyers practice the same thing. So, all right. I think are we about coming up on a little break here, Benjamin?
Well, you know, Harry, seeing as you mentioned that and we're so close to 8:30, I think we'll take our break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston.
Our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And we are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We have four offices conveniently located in from north to south in Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, New York, Corporate Woods in Albany, and south of here down in Kingston. And we are here each Saturday morning, some combination of the firm's estate planning team to talk to you about estate planning, Medicaid planning, asset protection planning, wills, trusts, powers of attorney, healthcare proxies, estate administration, IRAs, beneficiary designations, holiday gift giving, all those great things. And Debbie and I are here for the next half hour till 9 o'clock to talk to you. And you can reach us directly here at the studio by picking up your telephone, pouring yourself another cup of coffee, and dialing us at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. So let me just remind everybody again, there's about 10 days left in the Medicare open enrollment. Now, this is the time of year. It started in October, but it ends December 7th, all right, which also happens to be Pearl Harbor Day. But open enrollment allows each person who is on Medicare, Part A, Part B, Part C, Part D, to move in and out of a different plan each year, all right? So you only have about 10 days left to make up your mind. But you can really, let me tell you something, you can really, you ought to look at this every couple of years. You know, the general thing people do is, as most of us, we suffer from inertia and procrastination, and so we wind up not doing anything and just renewing whatever we have year after year after year without really studying it. So, you know, I mean, I'll just tell you, for instance, with me, this year I actually took it seriously and looked at the plan I'm in now and the plan that I'm thinking of moving into, which I probably will do next week. And believe me, there's a significant cost savings for me to move from the plan I'm currently in to a newer plan that will save a tremendous, like literally thousands of dollars by moving into the new plan. And so you can look at these things, and this covers not only, I mean, Medicare Part A, the hospital, there's no premium for that. You pay the premium for Part B, all right? Part B is doctor visits, laboratory tests, you know, x-rays, MRIs, CATs, all that stuff, blood tests, blood work, you know. And there are different kinds of plans, Part B. Part C is the Medicare Advantage plan, which if you watch any television for the last 3 weeks, ad nauseum, you will see, who is it, Jimmy Joe Walker from Good Times? Joe Namath, George Foreman, what are the other ones? I'm sorry. But every 22 minutes, one of these guys is on TV promoting Medicare Advantage. I want all the plans. I want everything. I want all the advantages. I called up because I got dental care. I called up because I got vision care. I called up because I got home care. Well, yes. Some of these things are included in some of the Medicare Advantage Part C plans. But trust me, you're not going to get 16 hours of home care by switching to the other plan.
No.
I can assure you about that. The one I looked at, I think, gave you I think you got 18 hours in the entire year of home care services.
Mm-hmm.
So as they say, you know, read the fine print. Read the fine print. You know,
Harry, you're, Debbie,
yeah.
We do have another caller. We have Jim from Albany County.
Good morning, Jim.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Good morning, people. I want to ask you a question about a safe deposit box.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I have a safe deposit box, and I have somebody else on the box, too, in case something happens to me. Now, if I pass away, can that person go down and get my stuff they're on the box, too. They wrote off and come down and did all the paperwork. Can they take everything out?
Well,
are they joint or are they a deputy?
Pardon me? I didn't understand what you said.
So if a person is joint on a safety deposit box,
yes, they are.
Then they
are
can joint. Go into
they
the box.
They signed all the paperwork, did all the they had to do. They wouldn't do it on the phone. He had to come down and write everything out, so.
Okay, but sometimes they put people on as deputies, which you might just want to follow up with them, because a deputy is kind of like a power of attorney. It dies when the person dies. So if this person is a deputy as opposed to being joint, then no, they would not
so.
Be
they
able
told
to get...
Me, they told me that they can come down and they can take that stuff out of the box. Because their
after
name
you're
is
dead?
Gone. Pardon me?
After you're dead, they told you that?
Yes.
Okay, I would just confirm with them.
If that's the case, because as Debbie said, there are two different ways of putting somebody on a box. One is a joint owner, and the other is a deputy. All right?
Remember, that's a joint owner. I got the paperwork here. It's a joint owner.
Great. Okay. Then that's the case. That person.
Can she go down and get everything out of the box, or do we have to go through?
Yes, they should be able to do that, because even though you passed away, the box would now belong to that other person. And they should be able to go down to the bank following your passing and get the box open and empty the contents and do whatever you want done with them.
Well, yes. That's what I want to know, because that's what they told me at the bank when I got the box.
Right. Well, then that's what they, yeah.
All the paperwork they told me that I could do. But I want to verify with a lawyer that this is the proper procedure.
Yeah, they would. I mean, let me say this. I have had experience with some banks. Now, your bank, it sounds like they were very clear with you, and you don't need to tell me what bank it is, but they were very clear with you. I have had situations, even with people who were joint owners of a box, where the bank froze the box when one of the owners died. Now, they're not supposed to do that, but some banks have done that, and I've had personal experience with it. So
I did ask him about that. I did ask him about that, because I heard rumors about that they do stuff like that. She said, no, we don't.
Well, some banks do. And if your bank doesn't, then I mean, I think you certainly can rely on what your bank is telling you about those things.
I don't know if they're attorneys or not. You people are attorneys. It's different, you know? You talk to somebody that knows for sure.
No, I understand that. Yeah. Okay.
So I shouldn't have any problem then. I mean,
I think
me.
You should not have any.
When the person goes down there to retrieve the box, there shouldn't be any problem.
That's correct.
I wouldn't
there shouldn't
think
be
so.
Any problem.
Okay.
No.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Have
You're
a
welcome.
Great weekend.
Yeah, it's difficult because that. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. The banks, some of these banks, I don't know if the big major banks do, but you know, they track obituaries in the newspaper, mm-hmm. and they'll put a hold on the box. They'll freeze the box. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then the joint owner is supposed to be able to go in. Now, what I do when my mother was alive, my mother lived in Pennsylvania, so her box. I put her box, it was her safe deposit box, I put it in me and my two sisters' names. So me and Linda and Betsy, we owned the box. My mother was a deputy, so she could go into the box. But when she passed away, the box didn't belong to her. Now, depending on the relationship here, I wouldn't necessarily advise doing that. You got to analyze the relationship of who the other joint owner is, and this is someone who would actually trust to go down and clean out the box. And, you know, and if you don't, then don't do that. But in a situation with a parent, a child, it's usually, especially if all the kids are on the box instead of just one of them, because we don't avoid the problem of one of them going out and cleaning out the box. But these are always difficult things. But, you know, here's the deal. In a worst-case situation, if the box got frozen, we would have to do what? Just a simple little $1 probate proceeding? Couldn't you
get a
little petition to open the box? It's not that big a deal, but it would require some paperwork getting filed in the surrogates court, right? So you know, but I think this guy seemed like he was very, very clear and direct with the bank about what their policies were, and so I think you should be able to rely on that. I really do.
Yeah, I don't think it would be an issue. But speaking of which, I have to go. Not this week, but next week, so we can drill a safety deposit box.
Yeah.
So we had a situation.
What was they charged for that? $200-$300 bucks? $200-$300 bucks?
I don't even know. We have a gentleman that passed away. His sister, who's his executor, lives out in California.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically, and they have no idea where the key is. And she basically said she is not coming anywhere near New York or anywhere else. Until COVID is over.
Okay.
So I have to go and watch them drill the box. So, yeah. So, you know, and it happens. And I've been at several box drillings. It's not a fun time. So, you know, you need to make sure that you have someone on the box. You need to make sure they know where the key is. Because even if they're on the box and they can't find the key, they still have to drill the box.
This is like Ocean's 11 or Ocean's 12, when the guys are robbing the casinos and they're drilling into Brad Pitt and George Clooney. We're going down the basement and trying to break into the machine. No, is it? It's not quite that dramatic and that exciting.
It's not quite that exciting.
Okay.
I have a question for you, Harry. When's the last time you saw traveler's checks?
Oh my God! It's got to be 25 years ago.
So I have.
It's got to be at least 25 years ago. Do they still make them? Can you still buy them?
You know, I don't know, but I have two estates right now where when they were cleaning out the house, guess what they found?
Travelers. American checks. Express traveler's checks.
Yep, exactly.
It was always American Express traveler's checks. When I went to Europe, when I graduated from high school, I was 17, and my parents gave me a whirlwind three-week trip to Europe, and there were about six or seven kids from my high school that went, so we had a ball. Went on Pan Am. Remember Pan Am?
Oh, yeah.
From New York to London. That was fun. But there we go. And my father got me, we got American Express traveler's check because we didn't want to carry cash. Yeah.
Don't leave home without it.
There are traveler's checks in this box that's being drilled? Or
No. These are two estates. It's like this. All of a sudden, I have people that are coming in that, my spouse passed away, and I found these, and they're traveler's checks. And there's two estates with, like, in the last 2 weeks that have come in that have traveler's checks. I mean, savings bonds, I see those all the time that, people forget about them, and they bring in this whole big stack of savings bonds that are in the person who passed away's name. But traveler's checks I haven't seen for a while. And,
oh, my God. But, you know, they're good. Yeah. It's like a gift card, except they don't expire.
Exactly.
It's like a gift, like a prepaid gift card. Because when you went to the bank, I think got them at a bank. You used to go to the bank. You give them $500, and they give you $500. They came in different denominations, just like money. And they put them in a little folder, like a little wallet with a little snap on it and stuff, and off you went.
it was crazy. But, you know, we're going to have to collect these. It was just wild because I'm looking at them going, oh, my gosh.
I didn't know where you'd take them. Where would you take them to cash them in? To American Express? I wonder if a bank would even honor them anymore.
Well, they can because
what we used to do.
You can't co-sign them, right?
Well, they're in the name of the deceased, right? The traveler's check is in the name of the decedent, right?
Right.
So you have to have the executor, right? The executor would have to sign the traveler's checks. And then you, as I recall, you could use them in a store to pay for stuff. The stores would take a traveler's check. I'm not sure a store today would do it. Or you could go to a bank and exchange it for whatever currency the country you were in was issuing. So you could go to a bank in London and get British pounds for $100 worth of traveler's checks or something like that, and then use it and spend it. But I guess, I wonder what would happen if you walked into a bank today with $5,000 worth of uncashed traveler's checks that were 30 years old and said, here, I want my money. So excuse me, I have to talk to the branch. Excuse me, I've got to see the branch manager. All right. So anyway, 518-476-5900 is we're coming up here on 8:45 in the morning. A beautiful Saturday morning in Albany with just a light dusting of snow on the ground and all kinds of interesting stuff going on. So here's an interesting inquiry from someone. The guy, very wealthy guy, says, you know, I have an $8.5 million estate, and I have 9 kids, 3 of whom have not proven to be very responsible. You think I ought to cut them out of my will, huh? What do you think? What kinds of issues and problems? I see over the last couple of years more and more people who want to treat their children differently, unequally. Rather fairly rather than equal, because of various considerations. Now, that always comes with a lot of red flags and some baggage, perhaps. So, you know, what's your take on leaving one kid more than the other?
That's awful. I mean, you know, we tell people you should tell them beforehand, oh, yeah, that works so well. No, I mean, I've had a lot of people that have left the money in trust for their kids. And I actually just did a trust, which is one of Sholem's famous trusts, right?
Like the David's trust? The incentive trust?
The incentive trust, yes. I thought that was great, that basically the trust beneficiary gets a distribution equal to the amount that they earn that year. So, you know, you bring in your W-2 and you get a check. And if you don't work, then you no get, right?
You don't work, you don't get any money. Well, it's like a matching. It's like a matching grant. It's like matching funds, right? It's like your employer matches your contribution to your 401k plan up to a certain amount, and off you go. You know, there. There's a lot of different views about those things. I think, particularly, I mean, in this particular case, if someone has that much money, it would be foolish to disinherit children. When you the problem with treating them unequally, and this is you know, we're getting into the holiday season and things like that. It is understandable and very it's normal. And what's happening here is in many families, as people get older, there is one or two children, usually a daughter, who become the principal caretaker and guardian of mom and dad, or mom right. or dad if they're widowed. And they, you know, they take them to all their doctor's appointments. They make sure they got their groceries. They make sure, you know, they're taken care of. All of their physical, medical, emotional needs, they have them, you know, they had them over for Thanksgiving. They're going to have them over for the holidays. And I have people and say, yeah, my son only lives three blocks away, but he only stops. I see him three or four times a year. Now, sometimes they live in California, and it's not so convenient to get in. But I find, I don't know about you, but some of these people want to leave a little more to the caretaker daughter who's spent a lot of her own personal time and has her own family than the kid who never shows up or shows up twice a year and sends a Christmas card. At the same time, that creates potential difficulties and problems between the children, particularly after mom and dad are gone. And what happens is, you know, Sonny Boy down the street who shows up four times a year figures that his sister put her up to inveigled mom to leave him more. You got 60% of the estate. I only got 40, you know. And mm-hmm. and they never speak to each other again. So I think the goal is worthy and appropriate. The consequences may not be worth it. That's the only thing I think of, you know. I don't know. It's a difficult situation. And the other problem is leaving half the money outright to your daughter and putting your son's share, his half, in a trust. Because you can't stand his wife, you know, your daughter-in-law or your son-in-law, and you don't want her to get any of that money. That you're leaving them each 50-50, but you're leaving them in different ways that are going to, again, impact what happens. These are really difficult decisions that families face and have to make from time to time. And I think what we try to do in the firm is sit down with you. And, I mean, some of these things they're really not even legal issues. They have legal consequences because, you know, one kid could turn around and sue the other kid and make a mess of everything. There are more emotional family situations that really have to be talked through and thought through. And I think from my standpoint, I think one of the things our firm has always tried to do is to be sensitive to those family dynamics rather than just saying, oh, well, this, and just talk legal. Because these are real people in real time that we're dealing with, and there's going to be a lot of post-death unhappiness when we leave one kid 75% of the estate and the other kid's 25% of the estate. It's just, it doesn't sit well with most people unless, as Debbie said, you know, the best thing to do is sit everybody down and say, look, here's what I'm doing, here's why I'm doing it, and if you don't like it, you know, tough noogies. But, you know, that hardly ever happens, does it?
No, but I did have a really interesting estate. I mean, we would love for you guys to give us a call. Harry and I could talk forever about all these cool things, but we'd love for you to give us a call at 518-476.
You know, they don't admit. Go ahead. Go ahead.
518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. So, the interesting estate I had was mom died. Dad had been dead for a while. And the family comes in, two daughters and a son. And we were going over the will, right? So mm-hmm. we go over the will, and it says basically everything goes to the two daughters. And, you know, and the son was like, okay. You know, he was like going along with everything. It was fine. And then when we go through the process of going over estates with people, we're like, well, mm-hmm. you know, did you bring statements from the assets? And so they start handing us statements, and the son all of a sudden just gets this face, and I'm like, is everything okay? He goes, wait, what did you just say? What did you say that she had in her bank account? And it was like over $500,000, right? And he says, are you kidding me? And I'm like, no, why? And he's like, I can't believe it. He goes, I have been supporting my mother for the last 2 years. She told me she had absolutely no money, so I have been sending her money. I've been paying her bills and sending her money for the last 2 years because she didn't have any money. So the mom just assumed that he had enough money to pay her bills and pay for everything, so why not give it to the other two daughters? He was not a happy camper. And so the daughters were just like, you know, and I said, oh, well, you know, I'm sure that this is something that you guys can work out between the three of you. You know, obviously there was not an understanding as to, you know, mom didn't realize that, you know, and the daughters were like, yeah, no. Mm-mm. No, wow. Not giving them anything.
Harry, Debbie, we have another caller. We have George in Schenectady.
Good morning, George.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. And you?
I feel bad. My question is in reference to the trust that you were speaking about earlier. Can you implement certain controls within a trust as to the distribution of the assets?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Let's say I have two kids and I want to give them equal shares, but I feel that one of them has to kind of work at the assets because some of them are real estate, so he should be getting a little bit more. I don't know if it's a management fee or however it should be done, but obviously his share is going to be a little bit more than the other sibling.
Right. I don't think if you had a bunch of real estate or income property that you were renting and he was essentially acting as the property manager. I mean, you know, in a normal commercial real estate situation, the property manager probably pick up 10% of the, you know, 10% of the collected revenue, and then take care of making sure all the taxes, the expenses, utilities are paid, the insurance is adequate, all that stuff, dealing with the tenants, all that stuff. And so one way or another, either through paying a management fee, it would be better maybe to allocate it on death differently, because if you pay him a management fee, he's got to pay income tax on it, okay? It's earned income. He's got to pay tax on it. If you allocate it differently in your estate plan on death, then he would inherit it free of any income tax. So that's just a tax issue we could talk about.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, it's going to be an unofficial management fee. I don't want him to sit there and just actually write it off as a management fee. I want him to take the cash. If he wants to take the cash from it, that's what it is. I mean, I trust him. He's also going to be the trustee of the trust. Does that give him an extra percentage if you're a trustee?
Well, a trustee would be entitled to commissions or you could pay him. You could award him an annual fee based on his duties as trustee. You could say, well, I want to have $10,000 a year for acting as trustee of the trust. Or, yeah, there's a lot of different trusts are very flexible. For instance, let's say you had a kid who had a problem with drugs or alcohol. We've done trusts where in order for the child to receive a distribution from the trust, they have to go through they got to be tested and see if they got drugs and alcohol in their system, all right, before we make a distribution. Or if the trustee doesn't think the kid is being up front, we can, instead of giving the child $1,500 to pay their rent in their apartment, the trustee can pay it directly to the landlord, so we know that their expenses are being paid, and we're not funneling money to a kid who's going to blow it on, you know, on drugs and heroin, stuff like that. So there's all kinds of, these are called incentive trusts. They are designed to incentivize a certain positive behavior in people. We could say, listen, I'm going to give each of my grandchildren $100,000, but only if they complete their college education, all right? And if they don't, they don't get the $100,000. So there's lots of ways, and there are different views of these things. Some people think they're great ideas. Other thing, people think it's unfair to burden people with this. But it's a matter of personal preference. You know your family, you know your kids, and what your goals and objectives are to incentivize them to enact certain types of behavior.
Right. And I understand that a trust can be used in lieu of a will. I mean, you don't necessarily have to have a will.
Well, if we did a trust for you, you're still going to have a will, just in case. But the trust would probably hold virtually all of your assets, other than retirement assets, because trusts, unlike wills, do not have to go through the probate courts when you die. You can, and they're not as subject to attack as a will is. In other words, in a will, if you're not leaving everything to the people who, in a will in New York, in order to probate the will, you have to give a copy of the will to everybody who would have inherited your estate had you died without a will. And those people may not all be in your will. And they may not be happy that they're not in your will. And they can make a mess for the other family members if they choose to. In a trust, we don't have to give anybody notice who would have inherited your estate had you died without a trust. We don't have to involve those people. And it doesn't mean they can't bring an action, but it shifts the burden of proof from you to them in terms of financing the lawsuit and stuff. So, yeah.
So they can bring an action within a trust?
Oh, sure. You can bring it, sure. Yeah, but you know what? They're going to have to go hire a lawyer and probably pay him a $25,000 upfront fee. All right? And then we'll see how much they want to fight this thing. All right?
So the burden of proof in showing that a trust is unjust is much higher from a financial standpoint than it would be for a will.
Yeah, because a person, your kid who's challenging the trust is going to have to pay a lawyer and bring an action to set aside the trust. In a will, the executor is going to file the will in court, and all the kid has to do is say, oh, I have objections. I think he was in the late stages of dementia when he made this will. He didn't know what the heck he was doing, and that's why I'm not in it, or that's why I'm not getting as much. So there you go.
Well, that's the end.
Time, Debbie.
That's it. You guys have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next weekend.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.